Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Let's begin now.
Welcome in, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. This is After Hours. Got Nathan Williams producing the show, Drew Nixon and myself, Mac Morey, with you for the next 3 hours tonight.
Yeah, a three-hour
special. Lucky us.
How about
lucky
that?
Lucky listeners. Make sure you text into the show. 913-586-7965 is the number to the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. 913-586-7965. Got a lot on the docket today. We'll talk some college football, of course, because
yeah,
podcast is on the way.
I went on ahead and printed you guys out a bowl schedule with the helmets.
You're so
and
nice.
And a bracket as well. You and Nathan both. If you want one, go to fbschedules.com. You'll be able to find them there. But yeah, a new 249 miles of college football podcast comes out tomorrow. We're going to be breaking down the bowl games that Missouri and K-State are in a little bit. Not really too much. Don't want to, you know, nerd out too much. But we'll talk about the CFP. We'll talk about some of the things we're going to talk about tonight as well. So you get a little taste of what the podcast will be like tomorrow as
You're
well.
You're going to predict every bowl game.
I will.
Over the next few weeks.
Not on the show.
Over the next few weeks.
On the podcast, yes. For the sickos, I will predict every single bowl game for college football season to get you ready. Yeah, I'm very excited. I love college football. And this is like the best time of the year where you go like into winter break, you know, like is winter break for like high school and middle school would normally be coming up here like the end of this week or whatever. I just sit at home, go out in the snow a little bit, play with some friends. But then it's like, hey, I'm grinding the bowl games out every day. The best days are like the 26th, 27th, 28th, where you at noon, like two games at noon, two games at three.
Games
at 6 and
that's
another
butter.
One at 9:15. Oh, yeah. All day college football.
Well, I walked in today, Nathan, just, inside baseball. We do some prep before the show, get ready, kind of plan everything out, of course. So I walk in a little late. Sorry about that, Drew. But of course.
Oh, no, it's all good.
I walk in and Drew's got the South Alabama roster pulled up doing his prep. So he puts it in for you guys. He does the work, you know, he's really grinding.
Yeah, Drew is the source of many of my opinions related to college athletics
Exactly.
Games.
Same here.
These
you are too kind.
Games, so yeah, honored to be in your presence, Drew. But
you are too kind. I'm honored to be in everybody else's presence. I'm honored to be here.
Nothing about South Alabama over here.
No, yeah, me
Gio Lopez, baby.
And think about me. I'm not even through the glass, Nathan. I mean, I'm seriously nervous right now. My stomach full of butterflies to be just a couple feet across from Drew Nixon.
you guys do not need to treat me like I am royalty, you know, because I'm the furthest thing from it. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm happy to be here, though.
Yeah, yes. No. So we'll obviously have our out of left field question at 8. We'll have a bunch of college football talk, a little bit of NBA sprinkled in, Eagles drama to talk about. Mm. We'll have some audio there from Brandon Graham, Nick Sirianni as well. But right now, start off the show, talk about this Chiefs offense. A graph I saw based off Chiefs offense on first and second down versus on third down. And man, the juxtaposition is stark. It is something, you know, you look at their offense on first and second down based on, you know, EPA per play, which is just kind of an amalgamation of a bunch of different offensive stats pulled together, you know, expected points added per play. They're right with the Falcons and the Jaguars, barely ahead of the Broncos and the Bears on first and second down. You go to this offense on third down, which is, you know, behind the middle of the pack, by the way. Mm. You go to their offense on third down, they're first. They're ahead of the Bills, the Ravens, and the Lions. So my question to you guys and to the listeners, 913-586-7965, is how can this be? How can we consistently see this offense be so poor on first and second and down and getting third, honestly, third and medium, third and long quite a bit and just seem to turn it on and be the elite offense that we know and love.
I think it's weird because, like, they have the best third down conversion percentage out of anybody.
They do.
Like,
they're a good amount.
They're the cream of the crop. I think part of it is they run the ball effectively well, but a lot of the old adage of, you know, just keep on running and eventually you're going to start to break out some bigger runs as the game goes on. They run the ball really well early on, and I guess it's not even really well, quote unquote, because to your point, you know, they're not great on first and second down compared to other teams, but I think it's because they know, okay, Kareem Hunt averages like 3 yards a carry, 3.5 yards a carry. If you do that twice, you get to 3rd and 4. 3rd and 4, obviously easier to convert than 3rd and 10. They're a shorter passing game anyways, just because they have the deep ball, but it hasn't hit yet. They're very much an underneath passing route. The yards per attempt from Mahomes are lower, again. It puts them in position to be able to make those plays. So
dead last in explosive play rate.
So I think for the way that they are in terms of lack of explosiveness, Mac, I think they make up for it in, okay, how are we going to design our offense around who we are? Maybe not who we want to be, because if we can hit Xavier Worthy on a couple of passes, if we have everybody back, if we have everybody healthy, we know we can be more explosive. But who we have right now, we're a good running team. We have a great interior offensive line. You get 3 yards a pop, 3rd and 4. Patrick Mahomes will be able to make a play. He'll be able to find Noah Gray, Travis Kelce on the short little hitch, DeAndre Hopkins, he can find, you know, Xavier Worthy on a quick cross, anything that works to what we've seen throughout this season ever since Rashee Rice really went down. I think that's more of the standpoint on why we see it that way. It is interesting, though, when you compare the teams, and I like these charts, because while they can be confusing a little bit on the face of it, it shows you the comparison and what teams they're around.
Yeah, it's a good visual.
If they weren't so good on third down, they're not 12-1.
No.
They found a way where I think the irritating part of us watching it at times and listeners watching it, and what makes this team so frustrating at times, is because of the first and second down stuff. Like, why can't we? Like, we need to see it look a little bit more sexy. I'm tired of seeing the runs. I'm tired of seeing the little quick passing plays. This is what makes the Chiefs good, though, is they're able to methodically move the ball down the field. More 10-plus yard drives than anybody else in the league. Take the time off the clock.
8 more in the second, yeah.
Make the most of the opportunities that you have. They're very good at it. So it almost makes you say, as much as we might crave it from a viewership standpoint and what we see, the results are still getting you what you need in the end. Even if it is relying to Mahomes on third down to make, as the text line put it, puts the cable on third down when he's needed. I mean, he makes plays with his legs, whether it's the pump fakes and he finds Kelce, or whether he's just running himself.
Yeah, and to your point, 52% on third down, leading the league. Second is Tampa Bay at 47. That 5% gap.
That is a stiff gap.
Between 1 and 2 is the same gap between 2 and 9. Just for some reference on how truly elite the Chiefs are and kind of spread apart in their own world on third down. And like you said, kind of keeping them afloat. I mean, some of this could maybe be acclimated to play calling, perhaps. A couple of 3rd and 1s in that last game that I did not love, neither of which were runs. 5 of the first 7 plays on Sunday night were runs against the Chargers. 2 of the next 25 only were runs. Seems like they started out successful, handed the ball off to Pop mainly on that first drive, and then kind of just abandoned it completely.
Andy's addicted to the pass, I feel like.
I understand, but I mean, I just don't... He hasn't been this season, though, right? So I'm kind of confused. Would you guys attribute some of this to play call? I mean, Nathan, what do you think?
I mean, this is a metaphor for like the Chiefs' schedule, their season in a whole. Like, they will do as little as it takes to get by, but they will get by. Right? And it would make sense, as they are above the line, above average on rush EPA on third down as well. If they were just like this mauling football team that lived in 3rd and short, ran the ball on 3rd and short, they do neither of those things.
They don't do that.
When they're in that situation on Sunday night, they didn't do that.
Twice.
And as you guys talked about, they are in 3rd and medium, 3rd and long more often than not. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to attribute it to. I don't know if it's play calling. I don't have an answer for you, Mac. It makes no sense.
So you're with me. Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. At least I'm not the only one sitting here confused. And I agree with the 816. Mahomes does put the cape on every 3rd down for the 620. Just pretend it's 3rd down every time. LOL. Yeah, you know, I try to. I wish they would do the same.
Well, there's moments like even like with the no huddle where...
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's easy to say this because I think this is almost every team. And for whatever reason, like it's right before halftime and all of a sudden you go no huddle and you get 65 yards in the matter of 30 seconds. And you're like, where has this been this entire half? Like, excuse me? How come we can't do this consistently? And it sometimes that... it happens more often than not, but I'm trying to explain it almost from the standpoint of, I think I understand why the offense struggles on first and second down. I get that it's frustrating, I think, and sometimes to the texter's point from the 816 as well, another texter, some of the issues by penalties, whether it be some holds, whatever the case may be, sacks as well, because Mahomes is getting hit more than he has traditionally been.
Been hit the most in the league, 55 times, I believe.
So I think that it's a little bit of everything in a way, where whether it be play calling in a certain instance, or when you need to make a play,
I mean, the Chiefs
there's a penalty, or you know, it's not consistent enough. I think that's the frustrating part, is when it happens, we look at the team and say, okay, this is what it looks like when they're kind of clicking a little bit more. This is what it kind of looks like, but it's not consistent. And I think to Nathan's point, even I don't like the standpoint, we've talked about this before, Mac, that I don't like the idea that they're holding back. But it looks like they're not necessarily not trying, but it almost it doesn't look like they're concerned at all. They're comfortable with being with going in, you know, Mahomes is going to take care of it. I don't know if it's just
it's whatever it's reason.
We all know how every single game is going to go the rest of the way, probably for the Chiefs. We know how the Browns game is going to look. Jameis is going to throw for a bunch of yards. He'll throw a couple of picks in there, maybe. It's going to be an ugly game. Not going to be fun. We know how the Christmas Day game is going to go. It's going to be ugly. It's against the Steelers. We know how they like to play. It's going to be close. It's going to be tight. That's the way every game has gone. And as much as Chiefs fans want a blowout, as much as we can predict a blowout, you and I think of both this season predicted blowouts at some point. They just aren't coming for whatever reason. But as long as they keep winning, I feel like to Nathan's point, everything's okay, at least for now.
Well, it's just interesting that within those games that go that way, the drives are going that way as well. Moving the chains is going that way as well. And I'm not saying it's intentional, but it's so confusing and nonsensical to watch this football team.
Bottom 10 in penalties, only 76 penalties. That's 24th, I believe, 8th from 32nd there on the bottom. You got Baltimore Ravens at 105 with 885 penalty yards. The Chiefs, again, at 76 with a little over 200 yards less in penalties. So to me, I'm not attributing this to penalties. I think that's a cop-out, that there is more here. And yes, I absolutely believe, we talked about it, disagree on this.
Time,
I do think the Chiefs are holding some stuff back, and I think you could just, you look at numbers. I know. Again, Hopkins, I mean, they care about this comp pick, obviously, between a third and a fourth, I believe it is, with DeAndre Hopkins playing 60% of the snaps in the regular season. He will be playing more come playoffs. Like that, obviously, Travis Kelce, I don't have to sell anyone here listening on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Kansas City Chiefs on what 87 does come January. Yep. He's the best, and it's not even close as far as tight ends in the playoffs all time. But, man, it is... Yeah. You're frustrating me with your logic, because I know you're right. I know every game's going to be 24-22 or whatever, these weird random. It's just frustrating. I just, like,
two
this week against the Browns.
19-17, crazy.
It's Tuesday right now. I know. Come Friday, you can catch me. I'll be wearing whatever, you know, red Chiefs shirt I'll have on a red Friday, and I'll have convinced myself yet again that this is going to be a 2-score or 3-score win for the Chiefs. Here we go. This is the get right game. And obviously, some of these offensive issues can be attributed to the offensive line, which is what we're going to get to next. We're going to talk about DJ Humphries in this situation. And what do you do? They're still waiting back on an MRI result for him and his hamstring. We're going to kind of grade his performance and kind of go through other options with this offensive line and really come at the source of this. You listen to 96.5 The Fan. This is After Hours. You got Nathan Williams producing it, Drew Nix, Mac Moore, myself, Mac Moore, with you for till 9 o'clock here on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Kansas City Chiefs.
No more.
There it is.
No more.
There it is. Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports here. This is After Hours. Mac Morey, myself, Drew Nixon, and Nathan Williams with you till 9 o'clock. 913-586-7965 is the number to be a part of the conversation. We were just talking about this Chiefs offense, first and second down, the juxtaposition of that with third down, where they're elite, first and second down, below middle of the pack. Near like the Jaguars. I mean, close to the Bears. I mean, it's rough. Rough company. And part of that could possibly be, as we've talked about ad nauseum at this point in the season, here we are headed into week 15, DJ Humphries and this offensive line, Wanye Morris, just really the whole offensive line. I mean, Juwan Taylor has been not the best as far as pass pro for
getting called out again by Collinsworth on Sunday.
Dude,
I know, that's really bad.
That ticks me off.
It's annoying.
You know, lean back, and if you can get away with that, that's pretty good. You know, no dude, everyone does that.
Literally.
Every tackle does that, and he just loves to make a point of this. Gosh, I love Chris because he's hilarious or whatever, the slide, you know, the whole thing. Yeah, Mahomes, but like, dude.
Here's a guy.
You know, it's just like, gosh, man. No, that is really, that's irking me more and more. The more he does that, that's really pissing me off. You got me going, man. It's just like, come on. Have you watched Lane Johnson, the best right tackle in the NFL?
Yeah.
He does it 100%. Every game.
Yeah, I know. Collinsworth altered the first half of the season last year.
Yes.
By his focus on Juwan Taylor.
Yes.
Like, drove the narrative in the entire league.
If for whatever reason, his penalties do, if like he does get called for it, definitely Collinsworth's fault. If he gets called for it on Sunday against the Browns.
And
yeah, I'd love to blame it on Chris Collinsworth. Yeah.
I mean, I've still got friends from my fantasy football college and high school that text in every game now. There's Juwan Taylor. I was like, dude, this is Chris Collinsworth. This is because of Chris Collinsworth. Thank you, Chris. But either way, DJ Humphries obviously played most of the game, missed the last drive or so due to that hamstring injury. Still waiting back on an MRI result. We'll see what happens with him. Mm. First off, let's just talk about his performance. Pass rush win rate. It's so hard for me to say. 20%. It's the second worst performance among the left tackles for the Chiefs, which is not good.
No.
So that's bad that he was second worst among, you know, this is the worst left tackle play in the NFL. So basically, in layman's terms here, one of every five dropbacks that was a pass play, DJ Humphries allowed a pressure. That's basically what it was on around 40-something pass plays that he was in for. So those numbers don't speak well to him in his performance, but I thought there were a lot of plays that did look better, and a couple of which that were successful that I don't know that would have been if Wanya Morris would have been in the game. There were a couple that was like, okay, he actually gave him more than 3 seconds there. He held his own against whether it was Khalil Mack or Bosa. So what did you guys think? Are you guys, kind of doubtful that he'll be able to come back? Are you guys excited if he does come back and hopeful that he'll be able to get better? I mean, what's your guys' thoughts here?
I think that so Nate Taylor joined us on Cody and Gold today and said he thinks DJ is going to be a game time decision. That's what it seems like it's going to be. That's what it sounds like it's tracking towards. Again, we'll see what happens when the MRI comes back. I thought along the same lines as you though, Mac, where there were moments where you're like, ooh, yeah, I don't know. That didn't look too great. But then as the game continued to progress and there was one drive that was really bad where he got called for a hold. I believe, or it was a false start. One of the two was called for a penalty. Kind of killed the drive for them. People were saying, yeah, you know, he's just getting you used to the game still and all that stuff. I understand. I do think it's a little bit concerning though, where like Nate was on the show today and said there were moments where Patrick Mahomes would call the play, they'd break the huddle, and he would pull DJ back a second, like he was telling him what to do. Like he doesn't have the playbook down. And I'm not saying that it's a worry that he's not going to be able to figure it out eventually or whatever, but he's facing Myles Garrett on Sunday. If for whatever reason, like something's miscommunicated or he doesn't quite get what the protection is or whatever, that like he thinks it's the wrong thing or whatever, and there's a mess up, all of a sudden Myles Garrett is in Mahomes' lap and he's hitting him for a sack or at least getting pressure on him. And you obviously don't want that for how good Myles Garrett is. I think his performance, if I were to grade it, I would say a B-. I think he got better as the game went on, had some rough moments. But I think he got better as the game went on, and it's just something that you can see, okay, if we get the good consistently, we're not going to have a problem, and we're going to be fine. On the other hand, you don't want it to be inconsistent so much where, not that they're debating bringing Wanya in, but there's moments where you know he's going to allow a pressure, and if everybody's not on their P's and Q's, it's going to result in a sack. Mm-hmm. You obviously don't want that from the left tackle either. So I think they're fine. It'll be interesting to see what happens, though, over the next couple weeks with the Browns game, the Christmas game, over this like 3-game and 11-day stretch or whatever it is. We'll see how his body can hold up over it, obviously. I wouldn't be too worried, though, after just the one game.
I mean, I guess I was never really holding a whole lot of faith that the position would get solved, period, this season, guys. And based on what I would call as maybe a C performance on Sunday night, I'm not jumping off the train either. I'm kind of evaluating it similar to like Hollywood Brown of like, do I think this guy's going to be ready to go in the middle of January? And health wise, I do. The initial report doesn't sound like it's going to be a long term injury for DJ Humphries.
Yep.
And does it mean he starts this next game against the Browns or against the, I have no idea what the immediate timeline looks like. It wasn't great. If I was just watching as a lay person, yes, I would say I wouldn't really notice a whole lot of difference week over week that position. I do think Mahomes, the good thing is if Humphries does turn it on, Mahomes doesn't seem like he's reverting to that 2021 Patrick Mahomes where his instinct was to scramble out of the pocket immediately. He looks like he still wants to step up and maneuver in the pocket. So I'm confident that if Humphries can just get acclimated and get used to football, things can tick upward. I'm confident in that sense.
I agree. And from the 816, to expect anything from DJ now is delusional. Grade him after the first playoff game. If the Chiefs lose, then he probably got an F. I think that's fair. I think that's what matters.
Well, Baltimore, the pressure they do generates up the middle more than not. But Buffalo and Pittsburgh, I mean, you got Greg Rousseau and TJ Watt waiting on in the playoffs.
They're coming, man. They're coming. Exactly. And whoever you're going to play, if you do make that Super Bowl, it ain't going to get any easier. And if you're going to get there, you will need a left tackle, competent left tackle play. And to Nathan's point, I don't think, Mahomes, that ankle worried us for a few weeks. It looks like he's healthy. Looks like he's good as far as scrambling and running. His mobility looks up to par. To me, the Chiefs do not need excellent left tackle play. It just needs to be average. And this offense will excel. I mean, I truthfully believe that. I've been on the Donovan Smith thing for weeks. I agree with you, man. This is a no-brainer.
Like you were saying, too, you just got to get him 3 seconds. Like, just give Pat 3 seconds.
Yep.
And he'll be able to make the play. The way that they run the offense, he doesn't need 5 seconds for the play to develop. He doesn't need any of that. The way that they've been good, and we just talked about it in the last segment, the way that they've gone about things offensively, he needs 3 seconds. And if he gets 3 seconds, then they'll be fine. I do think that them playing Pittsburgh, though, is kind of nice because it gives you, in a way, I guess, back-to-back where DJ might, it might help DJ get a little bit more acclimated. Like, hey, dude, this is what you're going to face in the playoffs. Like, you're going to face Myles Garrett-type guys. You're going to face TJ Watt directly, potentially, in the postseason as well. So getting those two back-to-back facing whoever Houston is going to throw at them when they play the Texans as well. This I can get behind in terms of the get to January conversation and, get him ready for that. I understand that more, obviously, than, and we've talked about it before, the Hopkins or the Kelsey thing as well. Some big news, though. Steven Nelson is back.
Yeah.
Do you like, he's on the practice squad. Do you like it? Is it going to mean, do you think it's going to mean anything for them?
I think very good chance he gets elevated personally. I think there's a good chance that he plays. I'm excited about the prospect of them adding someone in general. Josh Briscoe came on Fesco and Dusty yesterday, I believe it was, Chiefs contributor with SI.com, and he brought up the point that even if he can just simply pass off a zone well enough and know where he's out on the field and just kind of be a veteran presence and have that knowledge and IQ, I would help the defense in the secondary tremendously, even if he can just do that. And he has been with this this team before and partially the system. So we'll see. I mean, he was a retired guy, hasn't played football in a while. He did say he was staying in shape in case an opportunity came up, and it did. So I'm hopeful. I mean, I'm always going to be the optimist on this, on these sorts of things, and think like, yeah, let's go. Steven Nelson, get in your bag, baby. Let's go.
Nate Taylor shared a story today. If you missed it, you can go check out our podcast page on the Odyssey app or wherever at Cody and Gold. Basically, him and Steven Nelson had gotten a little bit contentious, so much so, and Steven Nelson was like, I'm not answering another question. I'm not taking questions from you. I wonder if Nate will be able to ask him a question this time around, if Steven Nelson will remember.
See if things have...
That'd be interesting.
If they've mended. He was the one who sold his Chiefs stuff, I believe, when he left.
According to what Nate and Alex and Cody said, he did not go out very highly. He was not very happy with Chiefs fans in particular, I guess.
If I remember right, it was a contract that he signed in Pittsburgh that like the Chiefs absolutely could have matched at the time. It was like $8 or $10 million of AAV. It wasn't anything crazy. And it was like clearly something had gone wrong there as well. But maybe a little bit of personality is what the secondary could use. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't hate that. Little moxie.
Well, and you mentioned the veteran presence as well with all these young guys, coming up, Joshua Williams and Najee Johnson and Taylor and Roland Wallace. Like, you just name anybody. Having a veteran presence in there might be a little bit nice.
And I mean, and how often is it is just a guy not being where he's supposed to be? I mean, if Steven Nelson can simply just be where he's supposed to be, that's an upgrade. I know athletically, speed-wise, all those sorts of things, he will be a downgrade. But from the 913, Nelson knows Casey's system can get up to speed fast. I agree. I'm optimistic about it. What a lot of people aren't optimistic about is the Eagles. And if they're able to recover from the drama that is ensuing right now within the locker room between two main star players, we've got some audio. We're going to give you the lowdown on this thing. It's juicy. 913-586-7965. Be a part of the conversation. We've got you for 2.5 more hours. I did the math. 96.5 The Fan. Drew Nixon, Nathan Williams, myself, Mac Morey. 2.5 more hours. 96.5 The Fan. Your home for Kansas City sports. We're rocking and rolling here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. After hours here, Nathan Williams on the keys, Drew Nixon, myself, Mac Morey. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Drew B. Nix. He's got a podcast coming out tomorrow. Tell him about it, brother.
249 miles of college football as it comes out every single Wednesday. Maybe not on Christmas, but I'll have to talk to Specter about that. See if Speck will let me come in during time off, which would be a little bit weird, but maybe it'll be released on Thursday or Friday. But yeah, every single Wednesday, every single week, we talk about Mizzou, KU, K-State. Yes, while KU season is over with, there's still a lot to talk about. Jalen Daniels announcing he's coming back again. Really big deal. Also some coaching changes. Talk about that stuff as well as some portal news for K-State and Missouri. And then we'll look at the bowl games as well for K-State. They play Rutgers, and then Mizzou plays against Iowa. Kling's Hawkeyes. And Dana and Hawkeyes.
And Dana and Hawkeyes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that portal thing makes it a 24/7, 365 score, more so than it was. It really does. It's insane. It's enhanced a lot.
So while I do the podcast, I don't cover a team like that. I can't imagine covering a team directly with the portal stuff because there are so many changes. There's so much chaos that goes on every single day. Day one of the portal was yesterday or today. Ridiculous amount of names. Hundreds of names already in the portal. Kind of like the Eagle situation with chaos, but I guess the portal can be good chaos. The Eagle situation, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Twitter, which of course you can find Nathan there, Crown Bass 5, myself, Mac J. Morey 25. Some sliding in the DMs may have been happening amongst Eagles players and maybe some exes because Brandon Graham was on WIP yesterday, obviously popular, very popular radio station over there in Philadelphia, talking about how, well, you know what? Let me just let you know what he was talking about.
The person that's complaining need to be accountable. And I'm just being honest. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he noticed. He, you know, I don't know the whole story, but I know that one is trying. And I mean, 11 could be a little better with how he responds to things. And they was friends before this. It's like, man, but things have changed. And I understand that because life happens. But we got to, it's the business side that we have to make sure that we don't let the personal get in the way of the business, and that's what we got to do better as right now, because we know it's an issue. Everybody's seen some things, but we need to be able to talk things out as men, you know what I'm saying? And but we need to let personal stuff go and let's get right for this game, because man, it's like a lot of stuff, most of the time it's just a conversation that just need to be had, but the person with the problem gotta want to talk to the person other than others. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Fully loaded Brandon Graham talking about AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, leader of the team, and a top five wide receiver and the best wide receiver on that team. Extremely imperative pieces to the puzzle over there in Philadelphia. A lot of P's in that sentence. The last one, silent.
Yeah.
Nick Sirianni then today on WIP, having to kind of try and fix and save whatever Brandon Graham was talking about. Here's him today.
All I can judge things on is what I see on a daily basis. When I see, you know, AJ and Jalen communicating about the game plan, eating lunch together every single day, praying with each other before the game. Like, and so, like, there's going to be speculation, and I get it, you know, I get it, rightfully so, based on what's happened the last couple days. But all you can do is judge what you see. Like, I have more information. I see them every single day. I see what's going on in the building. And so you just have, like, to me, you know, we know what there's going to be noise, and I get, and I obviously get it, you know, just based off of what's happened here in the last couple of days. But I go on my daily relationships with these guys, with myself. I go on the daily relationships that I see every single day.
Pretty good work from Nick Sirianni there, trying to backpedal and fix this situation.
Trying
his best.
I disagree.
Oh, interesting. I like this. Okay.
You know, you got like a group of friends or something. You're a little younger and, you know, one of them starts dating or whatever. Well, then something happens, right? Someone's not loyal or whatever. And now the friend group's at odds. That's what Nick Sirianni just did. All I know is how he treats me and like what he does on the day to day. And like that was a word salad. It meant nothing. It meant nothing. And I do not think he was prepared to answer that question in the right way. I don't know. Maybe you guys heard it differently than me.
No, that's
it was almost like he was scrambling, not necessarily trying to find words, but he was trying to talk he was almost trying to BS his way through that question.
So
what you're saying.
So, all right. You're Nick Sirianni.
I could follow it.
You're Nick Sirianni. Nick, I mean, what can you explain with AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts right now? What's going on?
I know they're getting ready for Pittsburgh this Sunday.
Oh, he goes straight that up. Route.
You know what I mean?
I love it. Okay.
We've heard two comments in the last couple of days, and one was a current player saying something like, well, I know they got beef, but they really got to put it aside.
I know.
And then another guy saying, all I know is that they're good to each other when I'm around.
Yeah.
Like something
that's
happened.
That's fair.
Something happened.
No, that's fair. I like that perspective.
Yeah, you're brushing it off to the side in a way, but you're also acknowledging that it may be true because he's almost like the person who's not trying to be guilty. Like, hey, I'm the head coach, but I'm going to let you know I'm not responsible for it because as far as I'm concerned, when I'm around, everything's okay. Like he's almost trying to push the blame, not necessarily on Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown, but he's trying to push it away from him.
Where
Sirianni is like, look, I'm the head coach, but when they're around me, it's perfectly fine. This has nothing to do with me. Don't blame me for these problems, even though, you know, I've been on the hot seat before. People have felt some type of way about me or still feel some type of way about me. I think that's an interesting way to look at it that I guess originally hearing it, you don't necessarily, I guess, think. I don't know if that's a fair way to judge it.
I think
Nathan has kind of changed, and not necessarily changed the opinion on it, but him bringing that up makes it, presents a new side to the whole situation.
Is it wrong to ask if I listen to this again?
No.
I'm going to, can I?
I don't care.
I want to listen to this
again. Listen to it again. I think Nick Sirianni's trying to say they're good, but instead he says a whole lot of words for 60 seconds. Just give it a listen.
Okay, let's try.
All I can judge things on is what I see on a daily basis. When I see, you know, AJ and Jalen communicating about the game plan, eating lunch together every single day, praying with each other before the game. Like, and so, like, there's going to be speculation, and I get it, you know, I get it, rightfully so, based on what's happened the last couple of days. But all you can do is judge what you see. Like, I have more information. I see them every single day. I see what's going on in the building. And so you just have, like, to me, you know, we know what there's going to be noise, and I obviously get it, you know, just based off of what's happened here in the last couple of days. But I go on my daily relationships with these guys, with myself. I go on the daily relationships that I see every single day.
Nathan's right.
I can understand where he's coming from, but also at the same time, he said too much. Like he could have just said, look, I know what happens in the building. I'm around these guys 24/7. They have a good relationship. It can be testy at times, and we see that all the time in sports. This is one of those situations. We're going to get through it, and we're going to be better on the other side. Like him saying it that way, I think makes it seem like, oh, okay. Like he's around him more. But for him to say they're around each other on the field, they're praying on the field, they're eating lunch together. Like for him to go almost over the line in terms of how he explained it, not that he's making it up, but he's trying to come up with a good way to say they had something going on, but they're okay. It seemed a little bit too wordy. Yeah, to your point, Nathan.
Drew, the way you just answered that is the exact way Mahomes would have answered that if they asked him about Tyreek Hill or beef with anybody else. Hey, man, we're both out there trying to win. Things get fiery. Things get competitive. We're good to go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Short, sweet, simple.
No, you're right. The first 25 seconds of that clip were the same as the last 25 seconds of that clip. He did the same thing. He did it twice. And it's like, yeah, based off, you know, yeah, it makes sense off what's happening. It's like, well, okay, so why does it make sense? So there is something happening. So something is going on. And I think we talked about it on Fesco and Dusty this morning. Mike Tomlin would know how to handle this. And to me, this is on the coach.
Yeah.
At this point, this is on the coach. This isn't about Howie Roseman. This isn't about the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles. This is on Nick Sirianni. And I mean, his job could be on the line if this screws up their season. I can't remember which one of you, maybe it was you, Nathan. If they lose in the first round, to me, he should be fired. I mean, he needs to fix this. This is a really, really good football team that has spent the money, has compiled together a great 53-man roster. And here we are, week 14 of the season. What are they, 11-2? 11-3?
Mm-hmm. They've only got two losses. Yeah,
11-2, I believe. So sitting atop their division and with a chance at the one seed there. So interesting here. Interesting. Can they recover?
It's crazy to say, can you recover and they're 11-2?
I know.
It sounds nuts, but I think it's weird because it's almost like last year where everything fell apart for them at the end of last year when they had, where we're off to a great start. It almost feels that way.
Six of the last seven games.
It almost feels that way again, where they might not fall apart necessarily, but they could be on the brink of something actually falling apart again. Like, they're a really good team, but they've got locker room issues. And if they can hold it together, they could win the Super Bowl. But if they can't hold it together for whatever reason, it could fall apart all over again and blow up in everybody's face. And obviously, that would be the end of Nick Sirianni for sure. It just feels like a repeat of last season. We'll see what happens here in the last 5-6 weeks.
It's going to be interesting. The Eagles playing the Steelers this weekend. Oh, so we got
speaking of Mike Tomlin,
a huge game after that. That's at home. They'll travel to Washington to take on the Commanders. They'll host the Cowboys and they'll host the Giants. So they get their division, the three out of the last four games. And that's probably, even if this beef continues, that's probably at least two wins. They should be good with 13-4. So the Eagles good for the playoffs, but again, they got to win a game to at least keep Nick Sirianni alive. We'll see what happens with that roster in the offseason, see if they can get past this beef. It'd be tough for me, man. It'd be tough for me to put it behind us. Drew Nixon, Nathan Williams, myself, Mac Morey. Drew's already got the lotion out because coming up next, he's getting lathered up, baby. It's college football playoff time. We've got a whole bracket to discuss. The seeding is here. And I want to see if we can go back and find your original 12 teams and compare it to what we have.
Oh, okay.
We'll see if we can't find that. Go through the whole reaction. I want your guys' reaction to 913-586-7965. This is After Hours. We're here until 9 o'clock on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. That's right. It's After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Nathan Williams producing, Drew Nixon, myself, Mac Morey, until 9 o'clock with you. Talking a lot of Chiefs so far, a little bit of Eagles beef just now, AJ Brown, Jalen Hurts. People sliding into DMs, getting with exes, allegedly. Seems pretty for sure. We've got more Chiefs talk, a little bit of NBA, more college football on the way. That's what we're getting to right now. We'll get to it again later, but for right now, college football playoffs, our reaction. Drew, first off, I want to get your thoughts because you've got your podcast releasing tomorrow, 249 miles, right?
Podcast comes out, 249 miles of college football podcast, wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Every single week we have a new one, typically on Wednesdays. It comes out. We'll tweet out a link to it either tomorrow or on Thursday. But yeah, we're going to be breaking down some of the stuff with the locals, of course. We always do K-State, KU, and Mizzou. And then we'll dive into some of the college football bracket, the rankings, the matchups. Now that they're official, no more, what ifs, no more woulda, coulda, shouldas, no more how about this hypotheticals. It's we have the 12, we have the matchups. Thank goodness. And I think the committee did the right thing, actually. Big question was, are they going to include Alabama or is it going to be SMU? And I think SMU is well-deserved. Greg Sankey, not too happy. He said he still needs to understand or get the... He still needs to understand why the committee did what they did. And Mr. Sankey, very simple for you. Your school had two losses against 6-6 opponents, did not play in the conference title game. SMU has two losses against opponents that are ranked and also ended with a combined record of 20-5. And they did play in their conference title game. So it checks all the boxes of playing a conference title game. Conference game matters. Better record. Strength of record is there. Strength of schedule. Everybody wants to make it a strength of schedule thing. For those of you who don't know, non-conference wise, SMU had a harder out-of-conference schedule than Alabama did. Alabama's was 29th, SMU's was 20th. So everybody's saying, oh, Alabama just needs to schedule cupcake opponents. They played an FCS school this year. They played two group of five schools, and they played Wisconsin, my Badgers, who went 5-7 and are not playing in a bowl game. Alabama won all those games. It has nothing to do with out-of-conference. It's you didn't beat poor schools or average schools in your conference, SMU beat everybody in conference until they played in the conference title game against Clemson, who they hadn't played yet. Clemson in the playoff, deservedly so. And SMU deserved to be in there as well. I thought it was actually more of a conversation if you wanted it to be of Alabama versus Indiana, I think should have been the conversation because Indiana didn't make their conference title game. You could argue that SMU should be actually ranked ahead of Indiana. But yeah, I think the committee did the right thing. We got some fun matchups, though. I like the Battle of Indiana, my home state. IU yeah. going on the road to Notre Dame. I like
South
that.
Bend, baby. Let's
your,
go.
Your Tennessee Vols.
They going, got screwed. Absolutely screwed.
Going up north to Columbus to play Ohio State. That's a tough one. And then if they win, they get the luxury of playing Oregon, who, by the way, Jeez, they're man. The one seed. They have a tougher road to the Final Four than Penn State does or Boise State does even, who are the three seed. Boise yes. State, we could see Boise State being in the Final Four playing against Georgia for all we know. I like the matchups. I like what the committee decided to do. I know it's controversial, but it makes sense, and I think it was the right call for them to put SMU in instead of Alabama.
I think the system overall is still screwed, but with the system that we have, this was
I think they
the
need
best
to,
possible outcome.
Yeah, they need to change how they do the seeding, I think, to the point yes. of Oregon having a tougher road. That's where it gets a little bit sketchy.
You do it like the NFL.
I think that having, and I don't know how you go about that.
The brackets, you know what I mean? Yeah, each round?
That
would make sense.
To me, I would rather them reseed it. Like, it's weird because you want, like, the conference champion should automatically get in, but then you reseed the entire 12. Like, you come up with the 12 that are in, and then you reseed the 12 as you see fit. So, yes, Boise State wouldn't be ranked ahead of Ohio State. They wouldn't be or seeded ahead of Ohio State or Tennessee. Like, Boise State would end up being, like, the 9th or 10th team, and they would end up going on the road, which is kind of unfortunate because it's cool. It's going to be they're playing a neutral site game anyways because they got the bye. But then they're going to be going on the road, and it makes sense them being the 10 more than it does a 3 seed. If you yes. see things properly,
Boise State with then, a bye, Arizona State with a bye. That makes sense. It does not make sense.
I like the concept of how they came up with it, but now that we're seeing it in real form, they need to reseed the bracket as yes. soon as they come up with the final 12, just because it makes the most sense.
SMU beats Clemson. Clemson somehow gets a lower seed, or Clemson beats SMU. Clemson somehow gets a lower seed in the bracket. I don't know why conference championship games matter. I don't know why you'd want to play in a conference championship game overall. They seem worthless to me. Bring up strength of the schedule between SMU and Alabama. However, I agree that SMU should have made it over Alabama. I just don't like the strength of schedule argument. The SEC beats each other up, so strength of schedule is not the route I'd go. Oh, what's this smirk?
From the 816. Dude, the ACC is garbage.
Yes.
The SEC is the best conference by a wide margin. Yes. There's six SEC teams better than Clemson, SMU, and Indiana. If yes. SMU played an SEC schedule, they'd be 6-6. Oh, so they could beat Alabama then.
Yeah.
Because Alabama lost to a 6-6 team. Excuse me. They lost to Vanderbilt and they lost to Oklahoma by 21 points.
The Oklahoma losses. The Oklahoma loss is inexcusable.
They dropped 3 points against Oklahoma and Missouri, and Drew Pine, who stinks.
Yep.
Scored more points.
That loss is inexcusable.
I'm sorry.
Vanderbilt's
good.
They
didn't deserve to make the playoff. Alabama did not deserve it. And this is the thing, too, around this conversation that is annoying, because if there's six SEC teams better, if you want it to be that way, then why are we playing the games? Because what we can do, if you want it to just be the best teams, then I can give you six SEC teams, I can give you four Big Ten teams, and I can give you two other random ones.
Sounds
and
good
then
to
you
me.
Know what? We don't even have to play the games from August all the way until November. We can just skip all those games. Alabama doesn't even have to play a game during the regular season, because guess what? They're a better team on paper. You play the games for a reason. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not SMU's fault that they're in the ACC. They took care of business in a power conference and have a better, again, I need to repeat myself, they have a better strength of schedule non-conference than Alabama did. So SMU didn't have a cake schedule. They are in the conference they're in because they're in the conference they're in. Alabama's in the conference they're in because of the conference that they are in. It's not SMU's fault or Indiana's fault or anybody else's fault that they're in the conference they're in. You take care of business. If you lose to two, like, it, to me, if Alabama's losses, if they would have lost to Georgia and they would have lost to Tennessee, if those were their only two losses and they were 10-2, we are not having this conversation because Alabama's in. They are 9-3. They lost to Oklahoma by 21 points. No, and they lost to Vanderbilt.
Again, I'm okay with it. I just don't think
I understand your frustration, but we shouldn't play. There is no point. If you think that we should just put the best teams in, then there is no point in playing a regular season. There is no reason to play any games.
That's no, because the regular season helps me figure out who the best teams are.
No. No, because for this person, six SEC teams, who are better? We'll look up the SEC standings right now, and then we'll go to break because I know we're going to be a little bit late.
SEC standings.
The sixth team in the SEC.
I think there are.
This year, take a guess at who the sixth team in the SEC was, Mac.
Oh, geez, man. Florida did pretty well at the end of the season, but that's probably not it. I don't know. Kentucky? No, I don't know. Florida? I don't know.
No. It was Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And that's, again, if we're going off the standings, Ole Miss was not the sixth best team in the SEC this year, nor was Missouri. Nor was LSU. Texas A&M. They were 8-4. I'm sorry, an 8-4 team does not belong in the playoff. They lost to Auburn.
But they
don't belong in. If you're saying that the six SEC teams, if you want to take the six SEC teams and put them in there, then you would have A&M in the playoff.
He's saying there's six SEC teams better than Clemson and SMU and Indiana. Which, I mean, let's go to the ACC standings. Why don't we?
Mm.
Because the sixth best team in the ACC is
Georgia Tech, who almost beat Georgia. So don't come at me with one game rivalry, man. I'm just saying, don't come at me with this. There's six SEC teams better than Clemson, SMU, and Indiana. If SMU went 6-6 in the SEC, they could beat Alabama. Oh, that's all I'm saying. Georgia Tech competed, went toe to toe with Georgia, who is the second seed in this playoff. So I don't understand. I get your argument. I get that's what a lot of people are saying, but we shouldn't play the games. From the 660, what about Army? Army had a case, but them losing the way that they did to Notre Dame, if they would have competed better against Notre Dame, in my opinion, they would have had a shot potentially to pass Boise State. But the way the Boise State were playing, they were never going to be doing that anyways. I know we got to get to break, but
we're
going to address it a little bit later.
Oh yeah,
we're going to get to it a little bit later.
Absolutely.
I'm fired up, baby.
No, I love the text line getting a part of it too. Make sure we keep getting Drew fired up. Going to get me fired up too. I actually just got pretty amped up from a tweet that I saw from Donovan Smith, former left tackle with the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to let you know what that tweet was after the break, right here on 96.5. This is After Hours. Nathan Williams, Drew Nixon, myself, Mac Morey. 2 more hours with you. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.